Welcome all, welcome one to the Air Raid Podcast, presented by People the Matadors. I am your host tonight, the tweets you know, the face you don't, Jeremy Gillen. I'm joined by longtime producer, short-time friend, Dylan Smythe. How is it hanging, Dylan?
Oh, are we friends? This is news. My bad.
Well, I mean, for now we are, because I know that you're a very close proximity friend to Steve Martin, if I'm not, you know, wrong.
We're bros. I saw him play the banjo the other night, no big deal.
All right. I'm just trying to close down the gap of, what is it called? Like the tears away from somebody. What was that called? Why am I blanking? How many people you are away from somebody famous? It doesn't matter. All right. Thanks, Dylan. Okay. So we also have a very special guest with us, and that's our new contributor and hot takes extraordinaire, Tyler Lucas. How's it going, Tyler? Welcome to Viva the Matadors. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast.
What up? What up? Yeah. Hot takes. That is definitely what I serve up over here. That's just what I do. I'm a 31-year-old husband and father. I have a ton of hot takes. I just need to spit them.
He spits hot fire.
Spits hot fire, man. That's what the internet's for. We're glad to have you. Glad to have a part of the team. I got to pick up after you on the tweet machine, but that is okay. So, great. I'm actually really excited for today. We're going to be talking a lot of football. We've got the Big 12 media deal. The Big 12 media days just came and went with a share of drama that we'll get into. Melancholic Les Miles, Gary Patterson rehashing frozen water bottle debacle, Gundy's mullet, is Texas back? Probably not. Then we're going to wrap up with a pretty hearty discussion of whether or not Matt Wells will have the most pressure as a first-year Texas Tech football head coach. So let's get into it. All right. So we were at Big 12 Media Days, as it goes every year, and day in or year in, year out, we go up there and answer some questions. Not everybody's really excited, but this year it was a little bit different because we had a new face of the program, Matt Wells representing, and we were also represented by athletes Travis Bruffy, Broderick Washington, Jordan Brooks, Douglas Coleman, and Adrian Fry, who we all just convinced that he was there because he was a Big 12 champion for life, but whatever. Represented by the best of the best of the Red Raiders. Guys, did you get to watch any of it? Immediate thoughts.
You know, I've been a little busy chilling with my buddy Steve Martin the last few days, so I didn't watch it, but I did watch, all of the recap media that I could find. And I swear, the more Matt Wells talks, the more I believe in that dude. Like, he just inspires confidence with every word.
Yeah, I didn't get to watch a lot of it. Followed a lot of it on Twitter. But yeah, I have to agree. Matt Wells can really get you motivated to buy some tickets, that's for sure. I think he's definitely I could see why Kirby Hokut was enamored by him. I think, if memory serves me correctly, their first interview was like 6 hours long, and I can tell why. I mean, that guy, he can just light up a room, right? I mean, he just instills some confidence.
Absolutely. And let me tell you guys, when I knew Matt Wells was the guy, I go in on a regular Thursday afternoon to get my haircut, and I open the door, and who is sitting in the chair in front of me? It's Matt Wells. I'm not going to tell you where I get my haircut, but we get our haircut at the same place. Super excited about that. Also, dude goes to my church. But honestly, yeah, he's a really well-spoken guy. Definitely a family man. He's not as cold and as reserved as Kingsbury was, especially with the players. He's been taking them out, taking different skill position groups out lately to dinner and for fun, to really just kind of build this camaraderie. And you can kind of see it. The players are really reacting well, spending a lot of time on Twitter. You're seeing a lot more of our football players get involved on Twitter and, involving Wells in that. And it's kind of creating this, uniform culture of we're all kind of in this together. It's his slogan, right? We, us, our program. And he's really kind of illuminating that. A quote that I think his most important quote, or in, at least in my mind, when asked about the traditions of Texas Tech, he's coming in from a non-Power 5 program. He's moving into the Big 12 in a conference known for its offensive prowess and maybe lackluster defense, although, with the bowl game stats last year, kind of muddies that up. But regardless, he was asked about, how are you going to keep up with kind of Tech's historic offensive powerhouse nature? And his response was more of a rebuke, and I loved it. He said, he's happy to score points. He would love to score as many points as possible, but he is more happy to get wins. I think this is foreshadowing a more balanced offensive scheme, perhaps. He played a very 50-50 at Utah State with a huge emphasis on the run. What do you guys think about that? Does it give you confidence? Does it make you a little angry? Do you wish the air raid would stick around? What's going on?
I think Twitter needs to slow their roll. I think everyone heard that quote and they're like, oh no, like we're not going to score points anymore. It's all over. Like, chill. Our biggest problem is not stopping other teams from scoring points. And so that's kind of what Matt Wells is getting at. I think that's why we're going to run the ball. To branch off just a little bit, the most exciting thing that I heard that Matt Wells said on Big 12 Media Day was the resurgence of the tight end. I'm a sucker for the tight ends. Oh, yikes. Sucker for the tight end position. We haven't had one since Jace Amaro, and Jace Amaro was incredible. But anyways, yeah, I think change is needed. Like, we can't keep doing what we've been doing. And Kirby Hokut kind of said the same thing. And so I think ultimately it's going to be a positive. What about you, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm a little jaded just because, Tuberville came in and said some of the similar things that Matt Will said, not word for word, but he did say, you know, emphasis on defense, blah, 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 blah. You know, and so I take that and I'm like, oh, I gotta take that with a grain of salt, right? But what I think Matt Wells understands, especially bringing in the tight end, is you gotta win games in November. And how do you do that? You grind them out, and you're utilizing the run game a whole lot more in, you know, September, October, puts you up there into November to where you're not as fatigued, right? And you're not one dimensional when you get down to the 20-yard line. And I think a lot of Kingsbury's troubles were being one dimensional when he got down on the 20-yard line. Like, other teams knew our run schemes at that point, because there weren't that many. And I mean, at that point, throwing wasn't really an option. So I think utilizing the tight end gives you the ability to not only mask the passes, but also deviate the defense from the run, right? So I'm incredibly excited, but again, I got to take that whole defense. We're going to play defense. We're going to win ball games by, you know, 1 point kind of thing, a little bit with a grain of salt, because that just brings up old scars that Tuberville left on me.
Yeah, naturally, it's hard to get away from the coach speak. There's only so much vocabulary coaches can use, and it's all going to be recycled because they're all trying to do the same thing, right? They're trying to be successful. But I think you pointed out a really good piece of that people seem to forget, is that he knows what it's going to take to win in November. He's already speaking in terms that, if you can reference that, Coach Beard spoke in when he first came in. He's like, you know, you got to win the games in, you know, February. You got to win the games in early March. He's kind of looking ahead to try to take tangible steps in creating something that will be effective down the road. And the thing for him is running, not only being able to run, but being able to stop the run. And boy, I think Texas Tech fans are ready to be able to stop a run, because good grief, how many games have we blown where it seems like the defensive line just opens up like a can of tomatoes and just lets everything, you know, just lets you run for a 40-yard, totally disheartening touchdown. So it'd be great if we can get extra gritty at the late hours of the game and, you know, stop that. So looking forward to that. But on the offensive side of that equation, how do you guys feel about a running core? Wells has been putting a lot of effort into getting transfers and into kind of buffing up the idea of our run game, especially with this tight end being able to move in and offer an additional block. How does our run core, which composes of like Tashaun Henry, make you guys feel? Are you confident?
All right, Jeremy, that's interesting you bring that up. Something that kind of blindsided me at Big 12 Media Days was Matt Wells said Armand Shine, the grad transfer that's coming in, could start right away. And that kind of blew me away, because Tazan Henry's electric, and Sir Roderick Thompson showed us some really good stuff last year too, early in the season. So I expect it to be a running back by committee approach, and I think I've been waiting for this moment in Lubbock, Texas for so long, to where we actually run the football, and I'm all in for it. The tight ends too. The tight ends will absolutely help in the run game. He wants tight ends who can block, who can run, and who can create mismatches in the pass game. I think some of the tight ends he brought in can do that.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been this excited about seeing what we actually do running the ball since like the Kenny Williams and DeAndre Washington. Yeah, those days, like that was I couldn't believe we weren't running two back sets at some points, right? I'm just sitting there like, why wouldn't you do that? But I think with what Taizan and Sir Roger give you is different compared to what Cheyenne gives you. And I think Wells really wanted more physicality. And that's not saying that Taizan and Sir Roger can't give you physicality, but they're more finesse type players, right? We saw that against Houston in early season last year. But maybe the Cheyenne guy gives you a little bit more physicality. That's what Wells is all about. So maybe that's what he's looking for.
Yeah, and some fun facts here. Shine, I think it was in 2018, Utah was playing Oregon, and Zach Moss, their original RB1, went out with an injury in that game towards the end. It doesn't matter. But that's when Shine was able to come on and break a very tough tussle. I think it was 25-25, and was able to, you know, kind of solidify a win for the Utes over Oregon last year, which is just a huge win for Utah in their schedule.
Would you say he shined in that game?
I would say he kind of radiated, okay. I don't know. Maybe.
Let me be punny.
but regardless of how you look at it, the guy is a grinder. The guy is hardworking. And Zach Moss came back, which kind of forced him to make a tough decision. But I respect the grind, and he's definitely going to come in and shine in this depth chart. Whether he's one or two, I'm sure Matt Wells will not let his talents and his efforts go wanting. But yeah, funny you guys should mention tight ends who can run block and who can go out for passes, because we think about it, you know, who's passing the ball to him. QB1 on the depth chart for Texas Tech is none other than Alan Bowman. And of course, you know, last year Alan Bowman goes out with what could have been the injury that kept Texas Tech from winning the national championship, or however you look at it. The collapsed lung against whoever, I can't remember because it doesn't matter anymore. Matt Wells was asked during the Big 12 media days, you know, what's the status on Bowman? How's it going with him? Wells very confidently and very excitedly said that he is ready to go. He has been practicing all spring, and he is excited to see Bowman for the next 3 years. So this suggests that Bowman's lung injury sustained is kind of a phantom at best, and I think others seem to agree, because Bowman just appeared on two preseason award watch lists, one for the Maxwell Award, which is the best all-around athlete, and then the second one is for the Davey O'Brien, which is for best quarterback. So guys, how big is Alan Bowman for this team, especially under a new regime?
I mean, anytime it's your starting quarterback, so it doesn't matter who it is, they're important. They're going to touch the ball every single play. But Alan Bowman's a good one. He showed us last year what he can do when healthy. And if he is 100% healthy, like Matt Wells said, I could see him leading the Big 12 in passing yards this year. And that's saying a lot, because there's a lot of really good quarterbacks in the Big 12 this year.
Yeah, I mean, obviously quarterback for Texas Tech is always going to be a premier position in college football, given our history. But I mean, right now is the time that Alan Bowman has to, if it's going to happen, it's going to be this year, because of the strength of the offensive line being so good, with Jack Anderson, Dawson Deaton, all those guys being the primary strength of our entire team. I think if we're going to see something out of Alan Bowman for a full season, I think we're going to see the best that we can get this year. You can make a case that Alan Bowman pretty much got Cliff Kingsbury fired when he was injured. I mean, really, we were not the same team, and Jet Duffy tried to bring us back in several games, and he almost did. I think people forget that, you know, we came back almost won that West Virginia game. We came back and almost beat Texas until he pulled away late. And Jed Duffy suffered an injury. So those last two games were pretty miserable. But yeah, I mean, Alan Bowman's great, but What's your contingency plan if he doesn't? You know, what? Where do we go after that? Is Jet Duffy ready to take the reins there? I don't know.
Well, Tyler brings up a good point. The quarterback depth chart is a little hazy once we pass out Bowman. There's a lot of, you know, unknowns. But I think something we can take kind of solace in and rest on is that the Texas Tech offensive line this year is the most veteran offensive line in the Big 12. They all consecutively have the most starts, or collectively, I should say, have the most starts out of the Big 12 teams. So these guys are coming in not with any, you know, jitters. They are ready. They've seen it all. And whoever's behind them, they're going to be offering up their best. So hopefully it is Alan Bowman for the entirety of it. I'm going to go ahead and give my own hot take right now. I think the top two quarterbacks in the Big 12 will be both Bowman and Brock Purdy from Iowa State. After that, I'm going to go ahead and say Jalen Hurts is good. I think he's going to exceed expectations in a lot of ways and kind of disappoint in others. There's a reason that Tua Tagovailoa ended up taking his job. Sam Ehlinger is, of course, a babyface that probably will not do as much. I think the best thing I heard is that he will play to expectation. And then can you guys even name any of the quarterbacks?
Charlie Brewer is a good quarterback.
Yeah, Is there a more punchable face in the Big 12 than Sam Ehlinger?
No. And if it is, it's Tom Herman.
It's got to be Tom Herman. Oh, man. Yeah, both of them. Two peas in a pod there down in the 40 acres. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, Jeremy, on Jalen Hurts. It's something about him. Something about him, especially with Lincoln Riley coming out and saying that he's not outright won the starting job there at OU. There's something about him. There's something that just is a little bit off, right? And I don't know what it is, but maybe it's finding a system that works for him. And maybe, I mean, that's what Lincoln does. He really can do a solid job forming a system around a quarterback that fits. It's just kind of like Kingsbury could. But man, I just, something about not having him come in from Alabama and then not be the outright starter by the Big 12 media days. It just kind of gives me a little bit of pause.
It's nonsense. That's coach talk. Yeah. He's starting. Like, it's a done deal. He just doesn't want to admit it.
I would agree a little bit with Dylan, but also maybe not so much. There's always that air of inconspicuity. Maybe there's a quarterback underneath. You know, there's been a lot of quarterbacks around the Big 12 that ended up, I mean, Alan Bowman, people that kind of set at QB2 and then something happens and they become the instant stars. But you raise a good point. Coming from Alabama, this is a national pedigree. This is, you know, the titan of our football age. There's a lot to be said for somebody transferring away from Alabama. They probably see a little bit of, what am I thinking of, like stereotyping, of favoritism, of thinking like, okay, these people were trained by the elite of the elite. There should be no question that they come in and like run our program. But again, you know, replaced by Tua Tagovailoa, which is a great quarterback, but, you know, what was keeping Jalen Hurts from getting that QB1 spot at a place that he was recruited so highly at? We will find out. Guys, have any other takes on quarterbacks? Think Brock Purdy's worth it? You think the Purdy magic is going to last another year?
Purdy like a rock star. He's going to be good.
Yeah, I like Purdy. He's going to do great up there and make Matt Campbell look really good and Ohio State mad that he didn't take the job.
Yep, I hate to say it. Iowa State's a good team. Let me go ahead and lead into the Big 12 Football Media preseason poll that was released. Number one, unsurprisingly, is Oklahoma. Number two, also unsurprisingly, is Texas. And then we have Iowa State coming in at third. TCU picked fourth. Fifth is Oklahoma State. Sixth is Baylor. And then 7 through 10 is what I call the mix-up of new coaching. You got Texas Tech, West Virginia, Kansas State, and Kansas. All teams represented by new faces. All teams probably deservedly earned their spots. Guys, is anything surprises to you? Is there anything you agree with, anything you disagree with? I'm telling you, I don't think TCU is fourth. outright.
I'm with you. That's ridiculous because they have four different people competing for quarterback right now, and the guy they had last year was garbage. I don't know how you pick that team fourth without a quarterback, considering you have other quarterbacks in the conference like Alan Bowman.
Yeah, I definitely don't get that one. That was a head scratcher, especially over. I mean, you can make the argument over Baylor for sure, but maybe not Oklahoma State. I still like what Oklahoma State has to offer than for next year than TCU. I think really when these polls come out, it's obviously, oh, looky here. Of course, we're going to have OU and Texas at the top, but then it's just like, okay, here's the band of merry men down at the bottom, you know? And so I think they were just like, pick one, and they went with defense. And Gary, for all his faults, does feel like a good defense. And so pretty much year in and year out. So I could see them leaning on that, but man, defense only gets you so far in this league. Somebody's going to be able to dissect that video.
Absolutely. So let's take a micro look at it for just a half a second. Baylor over Texas Tech, and it's a fair bit of votes more. It's Baylor 453 votes, Texas Tech 281. What is keeping the media from putting Texas Tech over Baylor? Is it their defense?
A new coach.
You think it's just the coach? You think it's strictly 200 votes just coaching?
Yeah, 200 votes because they don't know what Matt Wells – they don't know anything about Matt Wells.
Yeah, I think it's definitely coaching has a lot to do with it. I also think that they know that, you know, on our side, we lost Dakota Allen, who is primarily the only person they know that played defense at Texas Tech, and Jashawn Johnson, the loss of him. So they automatically just assume that their defense is going to go from terrible to absolutely unfieldable. And that's just not the case, I don't think, with this group. I think, the linebackers may be the weakest part of our defense, and maybe you could say defensive back. But overall, we got a pretty strong group up front and a really strong inner linebacker group.
I'm very confident in Jordan Brooks and Rico Jeffers. They're ready. Both of those guys are ready to fill that spot.
Yeah, and my case is not against them. It's they can't be on the field every down. And so after that, who do you got? I mean, yeah, Rico, and then you got Jordan. But then after that, you know, apparently, obviously, we know Justice Parker was trying to play like a hybrid linebacker role. Was that because of depth issues, or is that talent? Is that trying to get the guy on the field?
It's scheme.
Right? I think it's total scheme. Well, I guess that's a good point to just bring it up since Tyler wanted to crack open the can of worms. Justice Parker is out. Justice Parker's gone. Tested positive for banned substances in his spring NCAA drug screening. And at the Big 12 Media Days, Coach Wells was asked, what's going on? All he said was that he is out because of something, and because it was Parker's last year as a senior, the one-year suspension he received neglifies is not a word.
It neglifies the situation.
It neglifies his whole eligibility. He's gone, kaput. We didn't know what was going on for a good 24 hours, and then Justice Parker tweets in the stupid note form that, you know, he was trying to gain some weight for this hybrid position, the scheme of like playing at the linebacker position. He was trying to like cheat and gain some extra weight really quickly. So we can only assume he's using steroids or like a beaver tranquilizer or something. But Justice Parker is out. So that is, you know, although not a anchor of the defense last year, certainly a piece of Texas Tech lore. Guys, what are your reactions? What is going on?
I fully believe he had no idea the substance he was using was banned. I think he's a good kid, and I think he just accidentally screwed up big time. Because he said he appealed it. So I'm thinking, like, as soon as they hit him with it, he was like, oh, crap, I had no idea that was even on the list. But it was pressure to – he's a small dude. He had no business trying to play linebacker next season unless he was putting on weight.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's an accident, and Justice is was a really good feel good story. Obviously, I believe he was a walk on, right?
Yep.
And made his way and kind of saved again one of these guys that saved Kingsbury's job back in 2017 with the interception in Austin. I liked Justice because he was really in your face, talkative, but beyond that, there wasn't really that much on the field that he had done in 2018. There's some that speculated maybe an injury had something to do with it, maybe just, wasn't being used right. But nevertheless, it sucks for the kid because I really truly think this was accidental and he was really trying to put all he could to be something on the field this year. And it really sucks. It sucks that some guy gets a year suspension for, taking a banned substance that he didn't know was banned. And then was it Williamson in Kansas gets one game for a domestic battery. So, it really sucks.
Your lackluster anger disappoints me, Tyler. Let me tell you how upsetting this is, that a substance that, if we're going with Dylan's story, which let's all take it with a grain of salt, maybe he knew, maybe he didn't, but regardless, a banned substance being the 1 year suspension and domestic battery of one game, that in no place should be the same or should be less than a banned substance. I understand fully if you're trying to equalize the game, you don't want anybody getting a head start over anybody else. But there is no place in football, although historically apparently there is, for domestic abuse of any kind to be limited to anything less than a year. I think that's just tomfoolery. I think that's a cop-out. I think Williams is getting a free ride from the NCAA because he is a star for Kansas, or to some effect, because Parker's feel-good story means nothing to the NCAA. It generates no revenue. Let's just hand down the harshest thing rather than saying, half a season suspension. Also, you have to be clean over the next couple of tests we do. No, let's just get rid of it.
I absolutely 100% agree with you. I mean, this dates back to like the Joe Mixon incident, right? I mean, that kid got scot-free.
And you had video evidence of it.
Video evidence. Yeah. And that was just beyond belief. But, Justice Parker, probably takes a substance that he didn't know and probably wasn't given to by the Texas Tech trainers, to be honest. And he gets popped with a one-year suspension for a senior, which is pretty much a ender.
And it's the end of his football career, no doubt.
That's just terrible, man. That's just really bad.
Yeah, he probably has zero chance to hit the NFL at all. Man, what a bummer.
But not only that, it also – I don't know who's going to start at safety next year. No idea. It creates a hole in the secondary.
Yeah, it really does because, Octavius Morgan obviously retired from football due to the injury that he sustained last year. So, safety is just a wide open position group at this point. I really honestly the whole defensive back.
Douglas Coleman's gonna be good next.
Douglas Coleman,
he's gonna lock it down.
And yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and Desmond Smith there. But yeah, other than that, the safety. Yeah, I don't know who's gonna be playing back there.
We may see somebody move up from the cornerback to the safety, but we'll see. All right, other storylines coming from media days are my favorites are a lackluster Les Miles, very unenthusiastic. I don't know if you guys have ever seen interviews of Les Miles when he was at LSU, but he's very eccentric, a very fun guy. You never knew what the hell he was going to say, but you always enjoyed it. At the Big 12 media days, kind of lame, kind of boring, it is what it is. Let me tell you what he stated that I was totally baffled by, and not a good way. Said that his starting class this year at Kansas is better than the starting class he had while he was at Oklahoma State, which a lot of people forget he coached there. So what do you guys think about that? Is Kansas going to make a splash in the Big 12 this year, or are they going to stay near the bottom, which they're picked 10th, despite having one of the best recruiting classes in their program's history.
It's not saying much, saying it's the best recruiting class in school history. However, I do think they make a splash, but a splash in Kansas means maybe not finishing last.
Yeah, I think a splash means that they jump up and get somebody at home. People forget that Texas lost to Kansas. Let me say it again. Texas lost to Kansas, and Kansas was terrible. So they've got that on their record books. And, you know, I liked the Les Miles hire. I liked it. It was really it was very, very splashy, to be honest. Like, and you thought, man, Les Miles takes the Kansas job, and then the Texas Tech job is open. Like, what in the world? And then we go and get Matt Wells. But, you know, I think Les can do a really good job in Kansas. Obviously, it's not going to be this year, but I'm also very questionable about, I mean, going from LSU and having success at LSU, where you can just recruit guys from your backyard and field a really good team, wins like 9 to 10 games every year, right? Maybe loses to Alabama. At Kansas, you can't do that. I mean, I guess you could recruit to the junior colleges, but you're in a battle with Kansas State for pretty much the same players. And right now, Kansas State's been kicking your butt in recruiting for 10 years along with everybody else. So, and it's really hard to go from a team that won maybe one or two games a season to winning 4 or 5 games and telling people that that's success, right? But I mean, if it's Kansas, it is, right?
You make a pretty good point there about Kansas State. I expect them to flip-flop very soon. Like, Kansas State will be the bottom feeders very soon. And Les Miles won't turn it around this year, but the next year and the year after that, I think Kansas could make some noise.
Oh, okay. Hot take. Everybody write that down. Kansas wins the Big 12 in a couple of years.
Yep, you heard it here first. That's what I said, apparently.
Man, this is when we'll find out if Les Miles is truly a good coach, because I think the best thing you can do after you win a championship is go coach at a shit school and, you know, make them win a championship. So come on, Saban, whenever Matt Wells is done, I wrote to you last year, come on down.
Did anybody tell, you know, Les Miles loves to eat his grass, before games, right? Or during games even, did anybody tell him that his artificial surface in Kansas? Because he might be regretting that decision right now.
I don't know. I think he may ship in some grass from outside the stadium. You know, a little, like a little grass smoothie, or just like a little pack in his front pocket. He'll keep a little bit of grass. Oh, all right. So I'm pretty sure this has made the rounds because of Tyler's super, super nice and super authentic article. But Gary Patterson was asked for some reason. I'm not really sure how it was brought up, but he was asked about playing in Lubbock. And his response was classic. He said, in the daytime, they throw tortillas, and in the nighttime, they throw frozen water bottles. Tyler, since you are the artificer of this, can you speak to this? Let's get a little taste of what's brewing inside of you all day.
Okay, look, I have no qualms with TCU. Okay, I should take that back. I do have qualms with TCU. You know, my thing about Gary is that he's just so egotistical. Like, if you look back on that clip, he actually is asked that question and he answers it in that fashion. But then, like, he's asked about Chris Klieman's hire at Kansas State. And it's a pure question of just, hey, what do you feel about Chris Klieman coming into the Big 12, and did Kansas State make a good hire? He turns that over somehow into, well, I coached at Kansas State, and when I coached, they didn't make a bowl game for 100 years, but we made a bowl game because I helped coach defensive backs, and we were the best unit on the team. Like, no one gives a crap about that, Gary. Like, no one's going to be sitting here talking about 1988 Gary Patterson. What they want to know is Chris Klieman a good hire at Kansas State? So I went back, and if you look at some of his press conferences, the questions that are – asserted to, like, the team and the program, he turns it back to about him, and it's always been about him. And so, like, for me, when I see Matt Wells, it's like a breath of fresh air, because he's talking about we, us, our program, right? And he never answers a question about in the first person. It's always about us and our program. Gary Patterson is nothing but about himself. Like, that's all he is. And so when he says something like that and throws a shot at Texas Tech, like, I have to answer, right? Like, I can't just let the man who let some stars on his football team do drugs and then get popped for it and then didn't give him a suspension until it turned into a worse thing where it's like a DUI and things. The Devontae Fields situation is just so, so crazy to me that he allowed that guy on campus with that history already, allows this guy on campus. And he gets arrested for aggravated assault against his girlfriend, gives him a 2-game suspension, two. In the year that they were going to play Texas Tech, which is the Big 12 Conference, in that it's the second year Gary's been in the Big 12 Conference, and he's got to have a good conference record because he didn't have one last year. He gives them a 2-game suspension right before they go to Lubbock, like the premier defensive player of the year. Like, the guy is just so shady, but then he wants to make everybody else the enemy. Am I making any sense here?
I think it makes sense. I just wanted to debunk the water bottle thing because I was an employee of Texas Tech University. I was a student. I was on that field working that night. And yes, I got hit by water bottles, but no, they were not frozen. We talked about it pre-pod. I don't care what month of the year it is, what time of the day it is in Lubbock, you're not freezing a water bottle outside or keeping it frozen for a whole football game. Like, that's just stupid. And then he goes on and doubles down and says one of his players got stitches. Like, no, that story never existed. And if it did, please send it to me because I heard nothing of this. And like I said, I was on that field. I was there that day. And it's total crap. And you mentioned all the other shady stuff that goes on there. And let me just say, while that shady stuff was going on there at Texas Christian University, his quarterback was selling blow.
Yeah, we have that infamous meme picture of Casey Baja with his with the aluminum foil mask. I remember, like, in 2013, I was at a bar in Dallas watching the game, and it was at a Tech bar, and they were giving out free aluminum masks when you walked in. It was hilarious. But, like, I mean, so I can't pin a lot of it on it because he does answer with, like, suspensions, but he always takes his time with the suspensions, and he always is more Baylor than he is, like, let's say Cliff Kingsbury, where he just, you know, kicked everybody off the team once you did something, right? Once you're alleged something, he kicks you off the team no matter what. Gary kind of slow plays it, so he's more so like Art Briles, but he likes to poke the stick at Art Briles and say, well, that's what they do at Baylor. Well, you also do that too, Gary. And it wouldn't be such a bad thing if, like, you know, he came up with something a little bit more original than, like, Tech fans being stupid. Like, I've been hearing about that for decades. Like, we heard about, like, I put in my article the goalpost getting taken down in the 2001 game against A&M and the guy having blood run from his head because he got hit by another Aggie fan. But he said it was like being at the siege of the Alamo, which I don't know if he knows, but everybody in the Alamo died. So it's probably not the same thing. And then you've got again, A&M. And I know I'm talking about A&M, who took their ball and went home and went to be the basement team at the SEC. But, I mean, they seem to come up with some of the wildest, crazy stories, like the manure in the buses and the spray paint on the A&M buses after the 2011 game. No visual evidence, no photo evidence. No one ever saw it. And what they did come to find is that somebody had shoe polished the car or the bus, and it happened to be A&M fans that shoe polished the bus. So, you know, and then the Oklahoma players that said that, you know, they were forced to wear helmets because batteries were flying. I've never seen a battery fly during a game. I don't know about you guys, but I'm getting tired of this.
Bringing batteries into the
You know,
we're too busy sneaking booze in.
Exactly. That's what I was saying. Like, there's no time. There's no time. But, you know, it's just it's tired. It's played out. And, of course, he takes Big 12 media days to take a shot at us. Like, Gary, dude, stay in your own lane, man.
It is worthy to note that both Lincoln Riley and Les Miles were asked about playing in Texas or playing in Lubbock. Lincoln Riley had nothing but good things to say. He was very appreciative of his time with Texas Tech. Says there's a lot of nostalgia when he comes back. He loves the atmosphere. And yeah, it gets wild, but he knows that's how it is, which is super encouraging. Les Miles went on like a weird historical tangent of like, I remember one time the wind blew so much, the poles went down and we had to wait 10 minutes. He's like, it's true. I told you. I'm like, okay, it's the ravings of an old man. But it's worthy to note that out of the three people, Patterson was the only guy to talk crap about it. It's been doing for the past, you know, couple of years. So
with a 4-5 record against Texas Tech, he decides to throw trash.
That's how it goes. It's hard to be Lubbock East. All right, but let's talk about another big headline, which I think will rile up everybody who listens from Big 12 Media Days. Horns down, officially becoming a penalty if directed towards a Texas player. Now, you will probably not, quote unquote, probably not be penalized for a horns down if it is A, not directed at a Texas player, and B, not prolonged. Guys, how soft is Texas to have this pushed all the way to where it's becoming an official rule for their anti-hand sign, anti-call sign, to be a penalty?
I think they messed up by giving us beautiful loopholes. Like, if I'm TJ Vasher and I score in Austin, Texas, I'm throwing the horns down at the crowd. And it's going to have just as much meaning as if I would have done it at a player, and I'm not going to get penalized for it. So score.
Yeah. Is there a softer fan base and softer university than University of Texas? This is ridiculous. And so we can't do a horns down or flash that, right? But Tom Herman can mock a player's antics on the sideline. Like, I don't know. Just worry about your piss levels, dude, and just don't worry about what we're doing when we actually win in Austin. Don't worry about that. Like, if you don't want us to do that, don't let us score. Just don't. I mean, it's that simple.
Absolutely. Matt Wells, coming for you, Tom Herman. Not a lot of people know this. Had to go on to Burnt Orange Nation and settle things. I don't know if you guys remember Todd Orlando, defensive coordinator at Texas now. Orlando actually used to be defensive coordinator for Matt Wells back at Utah State before he was poached by a coach named Tom Herman at Houston. And then Tom Herman brought Orlando to Texas. So now Matt Wells is back. And he actually complimented Orlando at being one of the best Big 12 defensive coordinators. A lot of that, I'm sure, comes from the nostalgia of working together and understanding, you know, how good he is. But, boy, we are coming for you. So let's just follow it up with talking about – I mean, that's it for Big 12 Media Days. So let's focus on the coach that matters for Texas Tech Red Raider fans. Coming all the way from Utah State, Matt Wells. And here is the question. Here is the question. Does Matt Wells carry the most pressure as a first-year Texas Tech football coach? And let me preface with where my two camps are, because I wrote the article on it, and here's what I landed. Either your quote-unquote all programs are doing good, so football has to do good now. And keep in mind, after Kingsbury was fired, Hocutt promised that we will be elite again. So he already put a lot of pressure there in my mind. Or two, all programs are doing good, so who the hell cares about football? Okay. Tyler, tell me where you land on this.
Okay, so I'm in the first camp. You know, momentum can be lost very quickly. I mean, i.e. look at the 2011 season where none of our teams made anything. All had losing conference records, all baseball, basketball, and football. And I even think all the women's sports as well. So there was literally no good athletics on campus at 2011. And it took a long time for that momentum to come back. And we saw success, you know, in 2014 with the baseball team, but then followed by the basketball team for 2 years in a row. I fall in the first camp due to the fact that right now momentum is so high that we've got to capitalize on it. You've got to put a good product on the field during the fall, and needs to be in the one sport that is big in the Big 12 and Texas, of course, and football.
Who the hell cares about football? Everybody, Jeremy. Everybody, and especially the people writing the checks at Texas Tech University. So, like, the pressure is there. But I will say, Matt Wells was asked this question at Media Day, and he spun it really well, saying that, you know what, now that we've proven success in these other sports, I can sell football better. I can say grown men have come here, or young men have come here and grown into men and have succeeded at the highest level. So I really liked that answer. It almost made me change my mind, but it didn't. The expectations are huge because, you know, football and baseball, or I mean, basketball and baseball are just killing it. So in track and literally everybody else, except for maybe women's basketball, but the pressure is on. I don't think it's a short leash, you know, like I don't think the dude's going to get fired in 2 years, but the pressure's on for him to produce. And that's, I don't think the counter argument's not very strong in my mind.
Well, and another thing he did say at the media days was he said that more than anything, you know, inspired him. It inspired him that the programs around him were proving that, like you said, that first of all, we can recruit to Lubbock, Texas. So get over it, every other fan base who tries to make Lubbock sound like crap. We can do it. It's been proven in a number of sports now. Also, Kirby Hocut, I think it was a video that came out either earlier today or late last night that said he was mentioning he recognizes, you know, the importance of football in the state of Texas. He's very glad, you know, for the national contention that other sports are doing. But football is what everybody's going to be focusing on. So it's just been kind of like too long for us to be irrelevant, especially the way we're excelling in other ones. It's almost inexcusable now for football to be where it is. So I'm agreeing with you guys that there's definitely kind of an ambient pressure. And that's something I've been pushing out on Twitter is that, you know, don't think that Matt Wells, even if he's got a cool demeanor about it, that there's not this ambient pressure from the fan base. There's no such thing. There is no such thing as national contending exhaustion. You're never going to get tired of being in the race as a fan. There's just no feasible way. Now, that being said, there are a number of fans out there right now who are saying, how many days till basketball? You know, they're the same people who are going to be showing up as soon as we start doing poorly in the season, because it's going to happen. We'll lose the game. When's basketball? When's basketball? You know, when's baseball? Guys, there's a ton of pressure even on that side. So it's just very annoying to see. It's a difficult question. I should just say that. It's a difficult question because he's coming into it, and I think we need to understand – Wells is coming into it, if you look historically, at the lowest point of kind of the modern Texas Tech era. I started my article at the Spike Dyke era, where this guy is a monolithic figure for Texas Tech. He was never above average, really, but he stuck around. So we had the Spike Dykes archetype, the lover of Texas Tech. Then you had this weirdo come in who won a lot of games, but really wasn't connected with the people. Mike Leach. Then you had the Leach archetype. And it seemed like Texas Tech, after firing Leach, has tried to kind of reclaim either of those fames through following those archetypes. So first you had Tuberville. And Tuberville was another outside guy. Tuberville sucked. He did not enjoy Lubbock. He was not doing well here, and he wanted to get out. So he did. Boo on you, Tuberville. Then they thought, okay, let's go with somebody kind of a small mesh between both, but more towards Spike Dykes because he's really Texas Tech. So that's when we got Kingsbury. And as much hype as he was and as much as we needed him at that moment, he definitely did not pan out. And we just kind of kept going. So, like, if you think about it as a parabola, which for all of you non-math majors, it's just a giant upside-down U. Mike Leach is at the very top, and we're at the very bottom right now. After Kingsbury, nobody expects anything of Texas Tech, and I am in some ways shocked that we didn't end up a little lower on the preseason media list, but it is what it is. There's in that camp, there is not a lot of pressure on Wells, because if he loses, then he's just another coach in a long strand of coaches that will probably come to Tech. Think of it like the quarterback for the Browns, you know, just another one on the long list trying to make it happen. But if he wins, I think that's when the pressure really starts to embed itself, because then the hope rises. You guys agree with me? You guys see what I'm saying?
You're saying there's low expectations right now.
Right.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. I think, you know, with Matt Wells, his persona helps alleviate some of that pressure, because it looks like he kind of welcomes it. And he's really all in. He really does get it. I feel like the differences between him and Kingsbury are almost night and day, where Kingsbury was very much X's and O's, very introverted. And Matt Wells is very extroverted and willing to talk and willing to get out there and willing to grind on the recruiting trail and get in front of people and be seen. In which maybe Kingsbury just didn't, you know. And so I think that's what it takes. And I think if he does win a couple games early on, which wouldn't be hard with a great offensive line and Alan Bowman back there. And, of course, David Yost. I think everybody's overlooking the staff that Matt Wells has put himself around. I think he's set up to succeed here pretty quickly.
Yeah, let's not forget, Yost is a part of the Leach tree. He was an assistant to Leach at Washington State from, I think it was like 2013 or 2015, maybe thereabouts. But he is very much part of this Leach tree of like, let's just score more points than the other guy. I think that's where Wells and his Patterson. What is the defensive coordinator's last name?
Patterson.
It is Patterson. I just got so stuck up with Gary, I didn't want to say it. You know, you got the defensive coordinator Patterson, who is very much a very active, like, he's very Gibbs-esque, where he is all, you know, I mean, obviously all in on defense, but he believes defense is going to be the road for Texas Tech to make it to the next level. So we've got a really good balance there of like two extremes, and Wells is right here at the middle. And yeah, the way he talks, the way he honors himself in public, it's just very comforting as a Texas Tech fan to see somebody who is just very down to earth, very friendly, but very professional. Kingsbury was always cold, had that kind of raspy voice that maybe ladies swooned over, but I was not really excited about, just because sometimes I didn't feel like he like was confident in what he was saying. Matt Wells, complete opposite. Does that translate to wins? I mean, we're going to have to wait to find out, but I can say confidently, like Matt Wells, that I am as excited as I can be. I'm excited for the season because of what it holds, because of all the questions while I've answered. I am not excited because there's a lot of talent lying around the Big 12, and it is truly a conference where the surprising can surprise you. So unless you guys have anything else, I'm good to wrap it up.
Get me out of here.
I just want a conference win that is not Kansas. Like, get me a home conference win that is not Kansas. Get me something to get excited about when I head out to Jones AT&T Stadium and make the trek all the way back to Dallas, Texas. Give me something to be excited about.
Absolutely. Well, all right. We're going to go ahead and wrap up the Air Raid podcast. It was kind of a long one, but I felt it was a lot of quality content. And if not, you can just let us know, and we won't change a single thing. Dylan, where can people reach you on Twitterverse?
I'm going to just throw this a complete opposite direction. Follow at Air Raid Podcast, but also, if you're listening, give us a like, subscribe to our podcast, review us on Apple Podcasts. Our last review is from like 2015. It's a totally new crew, and the last crew got bashed. So give us some new reviews.
Yeah, let us know how we're doing. Good, bad, we want it all. We want your likes. We want your subscribes. Tyler is a first-time Air Raid podcaster and new contributor. Where can people find you on the Twitterverse?
Yeah, I am at TylerL_VTM.
Amazing. All right. And as always, you can follow me at Viva the Matadors, because I never use my personal one anymore unless it's retweeting Viva the Matadors and liking my own tweets. Shameless. And then don't forget to follow the Air Raid podcast on Twitter as well. That is all for us today. Big fat virtual horns down. Screw you, Texas. And can't wait to talk to you guys next time.